This is FM 2.0 with the Don, Dean, Stormy, and the Grizz. Forever music.
All right, here we go. Don't fear the Reaper. Take one, roll it.
All right, one, two, three, four.
Wait!
Bruce, could you come in here for a second, please?
That was going to be a great track. Guys, what's the deal?
Are you sure that was sounding okay?
I'll be honest, fellas, it was sounding great, but I could have used a little more cowbell.
Manchester, UK, and around the world. We're happy to have you again here through this quarantine that we're all going through around the world together. With me, as always, is my co-host, The Grizz.
Good evening.
There he is. And on with us is a fantastic guest. I played a couple clips there that kind of clues you into who he is. First off, that amazing skit from Saturday Night Live with Christopher Walken, Need More Cowbell, which has become the quote of the century. If you want to make people smile around the world, just say, need more cowbell, and everyone
smiles. Pandemic needs more cowbell.
The pandemic needs more cowbell. Right.
It's as simple as that.
And then off the Spectres album, there's a track called Celestial the Queen, written by the man on the phone. And it was written with Helen Wheels Robbins, and it was called Celestial the Queen. Fantastic track off Spectres. And we welcome Joe Bouchard to the phone, to the show. How you doing, Joe?
Welcome, Joe.
I'm doing excellent. I'm really getting used to this quarantine thing. It doesn't bother me. It maybe back in May, we got over the hump there, you know, but I think everybody where I live, at least where I live, everybody is pretty sane and protecting themselves. And I feel like, you know, the grocery stores aren't going to run out of food tomorrow. So
there you go.
We're all doing good.
That's the important thing. You know, the music.
It's nice to have some time.
It really is. And to reflect. And, you know, and the beauty, the thing that I found during this pandemic is, are already, you know, our lives. Grizz and I have known each other since the early 90s. We always bring that up. But it's the fact that music was always that integral part. It's what brought us as friends together.
Right.
Just digging into songs and digging into music. And with this quarantine, it's allowed us more time to dig and to listen and take in these tracks. Like, for example, we were just those two things there. You know, Don't Fear the Reaper, of course, is a song. You know, and in Blue Oyster Cult, you were the bass player. You did co-write several songs and backing vocals. But when you see something like that song just continue to be as relevant today as it was when it was written, does that still fascinate you when you...
I am completely stunned at the longevity of our catalog. It's insane, really. I look at the numbers on Spotify. It's like 4 million listens a month. 4 million you know, plays a month. Yep. It's insane. And, you know, I mean, it's not in the, like, the Lady Gaga or the Justin Bieber world. You wouldn't expect it, but it's 50 years old. It's 40, 50. It's like four or five decades old. And it's just as fresh as it was back in the 70s.
Sure.
You know, it's 4 million more in a month than I have of anything I've written. So if you look at it now, it's really awesome. You know, and, you know, the thing is, the reason I pulled out Celestial the Queen is, you know, it's one of those tracks that you actually got to be the lead vocalist on. And
yes,
one that you co-wrote, which leads me into this project you've done, this new creation that you have, and it's called The Great Strange Legends. You know, the amazing thing about that is you've got Mickey Curry on there, who played drums on Brian Adams, Hall & Oates, and Alice Cooper.
And The Cult, Sonic the Temple. Cult.
Oh, one Sonic Temple.
Amazing sounding records.
Oh, no Sonic kidding.
Temple. Oh, no kidding.
I go back and I listen to that, and I can't believe how good it sounds. The guitars, the drums, everything is great, you know.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
But that's just one of his 40 gold records that Mickey has. So
40.
And he just happens to be a neighbor. He's in the next town over from where I live.
You can collaborate whenever you want, right?
Well, I talk about an open mic.
Talk about a garage band, man. You know, like,
yeah.
You can be like a kid again and like, hey, come over and play in my garage. And then people walk by and they don't realize that there's two freaking legends in the garage. That's awesome.
Super group playing in the garage.
I am. Well, you know, I'm a music fanatic, you know.
Yeah.
I got to be playing. It's strange not to be. If I'm not loading up my car on a Friday night with guitars and amp, there's something wrong in the world. But like I said, I felt bad maybe back in May. It's already June, going into July. I've kind of made peace with it, peace with it all.
I'm glad
I got the time to talk to you guys.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't think it's going to go anytime soon. And
no.
But there's some tracks on Strange Legends since I have you here. And it's really, you know, what brought us here to have a discussion. Before, you know, I also have notes on more Blue Oyster Cult, but it's really about this record, Strange Legends.
Whatever you want to talk about, it's cool.
Got the first song.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
Yeah, we appreciate that big time. Absolutely. You have a song on here called Forget About Love.
Yes,
that
is, that's the single.
That's currently the single. The moment right here I want to play that stood out to me, that hit me, was at 120.
I know what you're going to play.
You do.
Yes, play it.
Well, let's see. It's at 120.
Name that moment.
It's at 124 of this track. Let's see if it rolls now. So good. Was that the part you were thinking?
No, actually, later. There's another good part, too.
All right. Well, we'll get to
the big drum fill.
Ah, so that's where
we bring. Big drum fill. It kills me. But you know, that's a good. It's all good. It's all good, you know.
Well, you know what it reminded me of? You know what it reminded me of, Joe? It reminded me of, and you're going to think this is crazy, but it had a Monkees feel to it. And you're going to go,
yeah.
What are you talking about?
I was going to say Beatles.
Take the last train to Clarksville. Bump. You know, that bouncy.
Yeah.
Bouncy shuffle.
Yes, exactly.
Which is hard. It's hard to get that right, you know.
Well, but you did it.
Mickey just has this incredible feel, and that's like you know, drinking a glass of water to him. That's like he's built. His arms and his legs are built for that beat. You know,
that's fantastic. Well, you said there's, I want to get to this drum fill you mentioned. Is it toward the bridge?
It comes right after the third verse.
After the third verse.
Everything I let slip away. Start for myself. I got
That is good.
That is nice. See, Joe knows what the show is all about.
He knows about the rhythm section.
I was like producing the section, and I looked up and I looked at the engineer, and we both started laughing. Like, that's insane. That's crazy. But, you know, Mickey just pulls this stuff out of his hat.
That's fantastic.
Tremendous, inspiring guy.
All right. Well, let's move to, I love that. I almost want to hear that again, actually. It's so good.
Yeah, I play it again.
Oh, that's one of those moments, man, when the drummer does that, you kind of go, oh,
it's really? a little crazy. He just
get those extra beats in there and just woo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Right, we're really out of time. Then he comes right back in and swings harder than mother.
That's great. All right, hit and run. Hit and run at 137. I want to call this moment out here, right here.
Yeah, this is good, too.
This is so good.
I don't even remember when I was recording that song. Mickey said, "Hey, that reminds me of Alice Cooper," and he had played on "Feed My Frankenstein." It was like one of the classic Alice Cooper tracks,
you know? Right?
And he said, "I'm going to play this. You know, I'm going to give this, you know, everything I got, because who knows? Maybe Alice Cooper will record it someday, but you never know." And it was a pretty good track, but then the magic in the studio,
right?
And myself being self-produced, I have to make those sort of artistic choices, you know, and like, did we nail this one? And right. That one, I was like, that was the whole track is amazing from start to finish.
It really is.
And he's just laughing away, and like it's like nothing. It's like drinking a glass of water. For him, you know?
I am so envious of drummers, man. I play guitar. Grizz plays guitar. I cannot. It's even with air drumming, I go out of place. You know, I'm so envious of drummers. They got it down. And
well, yeah, I can't do it. A lot of good drummers. I have one in my family.
Exactly.
And we've been playing since we were 10 years old. You know, with Albert, and we've been collaborating online and doing like cover tunes for charity events.
Right.
And he plays the drums in his apartment in New York, and then he'll send them to me, and I'll play my guitar parts, and we put it all together, and we're still, you know, but one of his favorite drummers is Mickey Curry. Just happens. And Mickey loves Albert. Mickey loves Albert. He just loves Albert. Loves his feel and his artistic attitudes.
Well, what's interesting that you said, you guys are 10. What's interesting, though, is that you guys became the rhythm section. I mean, guys are the rhythm section. Were you like at 10 years old saying, "Hey, we're going to be a rhythm section"? Or were you playing guitar?
No. I started out as I was a trumpet player.
Oh, okay.
I played trumpet. I played piano. And then I picked up guitar. For most of my high school time, I was the guitar player.
Wow.
And when I got to college, Albert went one way. I went to college. I played bass in college for 2 years, and then the summer after I graduated from college, Albert calls me up in the middle of the night, says, "We need you. we need you to play bass. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. I was in a boarding house on Martha's Vineyard.
Wow.
Doing my summer job. And he and the woman comes up and says, there's a phone call from your brother. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Wow. What the hell are they thinking? What the hell are they smoking?
Good stuff.
So I pick up the phone and he says, we need you to play bass. And I said, oh, okay, cool. You know, it's what I wanted to do anyway. You know, I wanted to be in a band with my brother, and we were going to be rock stars. We knew that from a long time ago. You know,
that's incredible. And, you knew at a young age, you know, that's what you were going
to do. What had happened, he had been in New York for about 3 years. They had a deal with Elektra Records. The records never came out. There was like personality clashes with the record label. So it wasn't happening. And finally, the last straw is their bass player just wasn't working out with them. And they needed somebody that was going to complete the 5 members that became Blue Oyster Cult.
Now, they weren't Blue Oyster Cult yet, though, right?
No, they were called Soft White Underbelly.
Soft White Underbelly, okay.
For most of that time, they had a few other names. Stock Forest Group, when I joined, they were Stock Forest. But it was a good fit.
Yeah.
Because I didn't really have to go back to square one and learn how to play the songs. I already knew the songs. I knew how Albert plays the drums. So I knew we could make that sort of like really tight connection. All the great bands, the classic rock bands, they always had great drums and they always had this kind of lock. If it was Paul McCartney and Ringo, John Entwistle and Keith Moon. That's what Blue Oyster Cult needed, you know.
That's fantastic.
And I was easy. I was ready to do it. The big job that I had was to make Buck Dharma shine.
Yeah.
He's the brilliant genius of the band, can play anything. He's highly underrated, I think, in music history. He's just a phenomenal guitar player.
Do you know why he's my hero? In one of my all-time favorite songs, probably in my top 10. I'll go top 10 all-time songs ever written. I'm going to play a part of it right now.
Okay.
Ew, not that. Hold on a second. I should hit pause. It's this right here.
Yes.
I mean, this song.
You don't know how many times I called the college radio station and said, you got to play Godzilla. I must have drove them nuts, right? I was obsessed with this song. But you know what's interesting? You know, because you brought up guitar, right? The writer of that song is Buck Dharma.
Right.
When he came up, were you guys come into the rehearsal studio one day or in the rehearsal space and he laid down that riff and you guys went, oh my God.
Yeah, actually he's told this story several times about he was in a hotel room in Dallas, Texas, and Dallas is big. So he was thinking in terms of big riffs.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, they had talked about, well, we should write a song about Godzilla. And I think actually Patti Smith was going to write a song about Godzilla.
You're kidding me.
Somehow somebody just told me that, and I said, I never heard of that. Patti Smith was going to write Godzilla. But actually what happened is Donald just decided to take it on himself, and he wrote the whole thing himself. He brings in a cassette. You remember the old cassettes?
Oh yeah,
we had a lot of those back in the day.
So did we.
He would bring in cassette tapes, mix tapes.
Right.
He brought in the cassette to rehearsal. And we were like, "This is great." You know, this is we got to really, you know, not screw it up. just do it right. You know, And we spent a lot of time. That was a good one. I played my big old Alembic bass on that one. Got a nice little bass fill in it.
Right here, Joe. I got it queued up right here. Listen to this. I said to Grizz, I said, I'm going to play Joe's part right here because I love this part in the song.
Yep. Yeah.
This chord. Fucking so amazing.
So groovy.
Yeah. That happened once. We did 50 takes of that song. And sometimes we do like 6 or 7 takes. And, you know, number 3 was the best one. We take that one. And that would be the finished version. But this one we did over 56 takes. And I think that was number 53. And that solo only happened once. It only happened once. And it was just like, all right, here we go, 49, 50, 51, 52, 53. I don't care what happens now. You just go for it, you know.
Yeah.
You're just so loose at that point. You're like, you're kind of a little hysterical. But the magic was there.
Oh, my God.
The producers made the choice. Yeah, that's the one with the magic. So
thank
that's
you.
The one it's
Let's thank
be.
Them because it did.
Yeah.
And just real quick to tidy up this song, which was one of the ones that hit me over the years, is just I have to play. See, I made that a meme that is now the cover of my Facebook page, my personal.
Great.
History shows again and again.
About and it's so true right now.
That's what I'm saying. Yes. That's exactly what I'm talking about. Oh, my God. Why did I? Hold on. I'm blanking out. How nature points out the folly of men, right?
Yeah.
It's so true. History shows again and again how nature points out the folly
points
of men.
The God's folly of men.
It was prophetic.
It was. That's what I said. That thing just hit me as I was, you know, I've listened to this song a million times in my life.
That's kind of like the Godzilla story because it was all because of atomic testing.
Right.
That the iceberg melted.
Yes.
You know, the bombs in the Pacific melted the iceberg, and that's where Godzilla came from.
Right. So. And I just thought that was such a brilliant line. And the lyrics were Eric and Buck, right?
It was all Buck, actually. The lyrics
were. Oh, they were. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
They both sing it. They both sing lead on that.
Oh, that's what it is. They and both sang.
There's the all kind of sort of electronic harmonies and fun song to do. And you know, the producers and Shelly Akis, who did the mix of the Reaper, but he also mixed Godzilla, and an amazing engineer.
Oh.
We were lucky to work with the team at the record plant for 2 albums. That happened to be our biggest albums, you know. I mean, John Lennon worked in that studio, you know, and Jimi Hendrix worked there, and Janis Joplin, you know.
That's not the... What was the name of the studio again?
Record Plant in New York.
That's not the one that Iovine was in.
It's turned into condos. What's
that? That's not the one Jimmy Iovine got his break in, is it?
He was there. He was there. Yeah, he started there.
Man, I watched this. There was on HBO... An incredible 5-part documentary between Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre. And what an amazing documentary because Jimmy Iovine, I'm going to digress for a second and go back because I want to play Racing Through the Desert. But
we were recording Godzilla at the record plant upstairs, and Jimmy Iovine came up. Somebody wants to come in and listen to your song. Bruce Springsteen.
No.
Wow.
The only time I've met Bruce was when we recorded Godzilla.
Get out of here.
That's a great memory, huh?
Jimmy Iovine were in the back of the control room. I remember he stayed there, and he's like a little kid. He's like, whoa, this is cool. And you're like, oh, yeah.
He's like, oh, no, I'm going to go run. I'm going to go write Born to Run. That's it.
I think he was working on Born to Run.
He was.
Downstairs.
He was.
That's the kind of place it was. We had Aerosmith. We shared the studio with Aerosmith. And we did Godzilla at night, and they were doing Walk This Way in the afternoon.
The magic.
Same studio.
The magic that is in, and it's condos now. See,
that's condos now, yeah.
You know, there's a spirit. Yeah. There's a spirit. Like, because that documentary, and if anyone hasn't seen it, and I can't for the life of me remember the name of it.
But, I got to look that up.
Yeah.
Hard something.
Yeah.
All I know is that moment, because Bruce wrote Born to Run, or they made Born to Run in that studio, and it just tells a story. Bruce was so a perfectionist, and it took forever to get it done.
Those were very indulgent days. Time-wise, we burned up a lot of dollars at the record plant. Burned them up. Never to return. No, hey, the dollars on Reaper certainly have paid off. You know.
Oh, no kidding. I mean,
oh yeah.
Oh, Don't Fear the Reaper was recorded there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
same room upstairs.
That is insane. That's
and sucks. Godzilla.
And Godzilla. Yeah. How about Godzilla, Burning for You? Yeah. Did Burning for You get in there?
I mean, it was a couple hundred bucks an hour, you know, and we'd be there for 10 hours a day.
Sure.
But you're writing epics, you know.
These,
I mean, recording epic songs, and
well, you know, they're not all blockbusters, but you know, we gave it our best shot.
Well, we love it. We've loved it. You know, we've appreciated it. It's meant a lot to all of us.
Yeah, yeah.
And what you
I had no idea. I knew we would get through the next year, and hopefully, you know, keep selling more and the record label wouldn't drop us you know, you never know what could happen. Anything could happen. But, you know, we had a really good run there with very popular albums. And I can't believe they're so popular today. I really can't.
I can. They're damn good. They're damn good. Now, let me play a little bit of going back to the Strange Legends, right? There's a song called Racing Through the Desert. And this is a fantastic tune. And
great.
If there was one song where you go, you want to hear it and that makes you buy the record, it's Racing Through the Desert, right? It's
sweet.
Listen to this. Drums, man.
Yeah.
That guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Holy crap.
Screaming. Well, you know, it was basically a jam on my part. I just threw that together as a one-off sort of instrumental. I try to put at least one instrumental on my solo albums. I think every solo album has at least one instrumental. And it just is something like takes me back to the earliest days when I joined a band. We played The Ventures, you know.
I was just going to say that. I was going to say it reminded me of The Ventures and Dick
Dale. One of my favorites.
And Dick Dale type music, you know.
Yeah. Music and all that whole era.
Right.
I was deep into that, you know.
The Safaris.
So, Yeah, I mean, it was a fun track to put together, you know. And
you know, the beginning of that song.
I've talked to several people that have pointed that out, you know, and it's just like, you know, I'll work for months on some of these vocal songs, and the instrumentals I work on for about a week, and it's done, you know. So, and I think you need something like that every once in a while. So glad you pointed that up.
Oh, that's great. Chris, what were you going to say?
I was going to say the beginning of that gave me like a Tom Petty vibe, like a Running Down a Dream, like that drive to it.
Yeah, yeah. Where you're taking, really playing cool. off one string.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I'm trying to imitate, I hate to say it, but I'm trying to imitate Jeff Beck because there's nobody better that does that stuff.
The master.
you know, I'm not even... You know, I'm not even good enough to lick his boots, but he inspires a lot of guitar players.
And, oh, no kidding! No kidding.
You know, if I had my fingers that I had 20 years ago, I'd be probably even do more shredding on it. But that's okay. You know, you play how you play. You know,
that's it. Yeah,
it gave me that throwback vibe. I have a funny story that. When I was a kid, you know, my dad had a Sears Silvertone guitar, a Sunburst.
Yeah.
When Sears made guitars. And
I think my dad had the same one, actually.
Yeah. It was like, there was something special about that guitar. But,
sure.
But I remember my dad would never play it. But every once in a while, I could coax him to take it out. And he knew one song, Walk, Don't Run.
Oh.
And but it was the he would do that over and over again. I thought my dad was a rock star. That's all he knew.
That's so funny because I have the same story.
You're kidding. Wow. Your dad?
I swear my dad did the same thing. He only knew that one Venture song and he'd pull it out and like it must be something about the time period.
Yeah, that time period. Like, because as a kid, you're like, my dad's a rock star. Look at how he does
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Like, if he took requests.
My dad played guitar too, but he played cowboy songs. He played the old cowboy songs.
We had Roy Rogers Jr. on here, Roy Rogers' son.
Wow.
Yeah, we just did a whole show. It just went up live years ago. And he talked about Roy Rogers and all these stories.
They were singing cowboys.
Yes, Sons of the Pioneers. And
yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We dove into the Sons of the Pioneers and the history of Western.
Happy trails to you.
Dale Evans wrote that song. Yeah. And it's fascinating, right? All facets of music. There's no genres us, man.
Yeah.
It's,
that's the thing. You draw your inspiration from other artists.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of music.
Right. And she's a legend. Dale Evans, and there's also a track here called She's a Legend. It is...
Because I wrote the... You don't have the credits for the album, but I wrote that with John Shirley. He's a science fiction writer.
Oh!
He's written dozens of science fiction books. But right now, he's writing lyrics for Blue Oyster Cult. The current Blue Oyster Cult.
Wow.
He's written probably about 20 songs for them that Buck has put to music. And I don't know if Buck turned this one down. He might have turned this one down. And I got an email from John. He heard one of my other solo albums, because I have five other solo albums. And he heard one of them, and he said, he just sent me a quick note, said, I'm a fan. And I said, John, I love your work. Send me some lyrics. The next day, he sends me She's a Legend.
Oh, get out.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
so
awesome.
I mean, like, and I started reading it. I had to do a little editing. It was a little long. I had to take out. There was like a sort of a verse that didn't make it at the end. But when it finally came together with the music, you know, and the track and everything came together, I said, "Wow, this is great." That's going to be the next single to come out in the middle of July.
Well, let's play.
I'm working on a video for that now.
Ooh, a video. Nice.
Yeah. I got music videos. I mean, I'm figuring that I can't get out and play live shows. How do you communicate to the people?
Right.
Video.
Sure. Yeah.
So I built a video studio in this little building that we have here on the property. And we've already cut some stuff. You'll definitely be seeing it.
I can't wait.
Be seeing it before
time. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I mean,
looking forward to it.
I don't know. It's not like the corny videos of the MTV era where you had actors and all kinds of crazy scenes and stuff going on. It's pretty much performance videos.
Nice.
So, you know, but I think it helps to sort of get the feel of the song across. You know, and we'll see. You know, there's a zillion ways to promote songs, and video is a big part of it, you know. And I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Well, I can tell you that I want to play this moment at 2:06 of She's a Legend. Now that we've talked about it right here, this and another moment that's. Did you flip pedals there? Is that what?
Yeah.
Because that's the tone changed so beautifully there. The transition.
The tone matches up so well. You know.
Yes.
I love the tone.
That's kind of in the way that Kurt Cobain would just play. He just simply played the melody of the song when he did his leads. He just imitated the melody of the song. So there's nothing, you know, too complicated about what I did there, but the tone does match really well. And I'm glad you pointed that out.
We love transitions.
When
transitions are done good, that is a goosebump type thing that happens, right? Because it's like a nice shift in direction, but it's almost seamless and it works so well. Then you did a Kinks cover, which and you put a completely unique spin on it.
Good.
You did All Day and All of the Night, one of my favorite all-time Kinks songs.
Oh, absolutely. Great one.
Listen to this. This is a cool spin on it. I loved what you did here. Obviously, you've got bass in your blood, right? The Kinks version is very just raw guitar. Here, you've allowed the bass to have some space.
Putting out front a little bit.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that was easy. That was an easy one. I actually have the beginning of the song is a kind of an open E minor on it. It was like an odd tuning on the guitar. So I start out with this odd tuning but then it jumps into full Kinks, you know, full Kinks mode when it gets to the choruses, you know.
You gotta have it. You do. It's so good. Believe it or not, my favorite Kinks song is the "He Just Spends His Life Living in a Rock and Roll Fantasy."
Oh,
I love that song so much.
Yeah.
The
Celluloid Heroes. Celluloid Heroes.
Oh, yeah, Celluloid Heroes.
Don't tread on Mickey Rooney. Don't tread on Mickey Rooney. Oh. I cry when I hear that song. He's talking about Celluloid Heroes, the whole Hollywood thing.
Yeah.
One of the best songs ever written about that part of the era of the world, you know. But Rock and Roll Fantasy. There's a, I mean, Ray is unbelievable.
Check this out.
Really unbelievable.
Check this out, Joe. Here it is. I think I got it right here.
Listen down every street, and if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, the names are written in concrete. Don't step on Greta Garbo as you walk down the boulevard. She looks so weak and fragile, that's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess, and they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom, because she wanted.
Where was the Mickey Rooney? Is that in the second verse? Is that in Mickey Rooney in the second verse, or?
I don't. To be alone. That's only the.
What's that?
That's only a small part of Ray's catalog. It's so amazing. You know? Yeah.
So one thing I love to ask a guest is not a song you were a part of, meaning Blue Oyster Cult or anything else, a song in your life that when you've heard it through the ages, when it was your kid or in your, gives you goosebumps when you hear it. It could be even a moment in the song like we talk about, you know, a chorus, a pre-chorus, a note, a lyric, something that hits you. And if you don't have one right away, we can come back to it later. But it's always a great... Tutti Frutti!
Tutti Frutti! Oh, Rudy!
Seriously? That's the one, huh?
Yeah, I mean, some young kid asked me, who's your favorite singer? And I thought about it for like a half a second, and I said, Little Richard. Little Richard impacted my life like nobody else.
It's amazing.
I went to my cousin. I was probably about 8 years old. I went to my cousin's house, and his older sisters, my older cousin, they had a bunch of singles. You know, they had Elvis and, I don't know, ballads and stuff. But they also had Little Richard's Greatest Hit. And we put that record on the record player. And we're like, just out of first grade. Second grade, and we're jumping up and down on the bed like maniacs for Little Richard. It was like something from outer space. There was nothing like that.
You know, right, all that energy.
Big band, music, jazz, there was nothing like that. That was like insane.
He influenced so many people, too. I mean,
yeah.
You know, when you talk about diversity and how many... You know, across races and across.
Oh yeah.
Everything. Little Richard was just a big inspiration. This, right here. Listen to this.
Wah bam 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 tooty boo, oh hoo, tooty boo, oh hoo.
I love this piano play.
Tooty boo, oh hoo, tooty boo, oh hoo, tooty boo, oh hoo. Oh wah bam 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 bam.
I could just see you jumping on the bed right now as a kid.
jumping up and down on the spring bed, the old spring bed. If our uncle had caught us, we would have been...
Was that Albert, too?
In trouble.
Was that Albert, too, jumping on the bed?
Probably, yeah. Albert, my cousin Georgie. You know, my cousin Georgie and little Richard, just like...
Amazing.
Thing, you know? Good golly, Miss Molly, you know? Lucille, oh my God. And you know, it wasn't like Elvis. Elvis, I don't think, ever really wanted to be the rock star. You know, he wanted to be the movie star and the take on Frank Sinatra, whatever. But, you know, the essence of Little Richard was, this is something completely different. And he picked it up from everybody else. You know, the day and the blues guys in the South and all the great musicians that he had in New Orleans when he recorded those things. But, you know, it was a mind-blowing, life-changing event for a little kid, you know, and rock and roll seemed to be the way to go, you know?
That's what did it. You heard this.
Thank you. too hot.
The
too
vocal,
hot.
Man.
Too hot to handle.
That is amazing vocal. It just...
Yeah. He taught Paul McCartney everything he knows.
It's an amazing... Seriously, that screaming... That's what we talk about with vocals. You know, there's some hard rock bands where the vocalist is just screaming where you can't comprehend it. And then there's screaming where it's melodic. And and that's what Little Richard perfected.
It's right into the groove.
Oh, yeah. It's emotion. It's like he's just letting it all
emotion.
Out. Yeah. He's letting it all out in that track, right?
Probably would have been bigger if he hadn't, you know, become a minister and... But everybody's got to do what they got to do, you know. If it's Jesus, more power to you, you know. But he certainly was like a bolt of lightning, you know.
Oh, he was. Let me. There's one more from Strange Legends that really stood out to me, and that was "Bottom for the Bottomless."
Oh.
And I've got some comparisons here when I listen to this track, and it was amazing. Listen to this, guys. So damn good. And it kind of had, now, let me do this. You're going to think I'm nuts, but check this out.
Yeah. I wasn't thinking about that.
I know you weren't. I know you weren't, but it had that vibe to it.
Yeah.
You know?
This is another John Shirley lyric. John sent me those lyrics along with She's a Legend. And I was thinking kind of in terms of doing something a little bit more prog rock.
Like Alan Parsons. You know, that was the other thing I thought of.
Alan Parsons, right? Eye in the Sky.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some
Sirius. Like that song Sirius.
A little bit. I was sort of into Chris Squire and all of the great keyboards players that Yes has had. I didn't really, you know, I might say that I want to go a little prog, but I don't really go full prog. I can't do that. I gotta stick with my blues roots, you know.
Right.
You know. But I love the lyric and that one is a song that I'm very happy with, and I'm glad you mentioned that one too.
I love that one. In your career. Of all the songs you've worked on, is there one that stands out to you that has an incredible memory attached to it? Emotionally, maybe, like when it was written or when you presented it and played it for the first time. And now I could tell you this, you, a song you wrote, I think it might have been one of the earlier songs you wrote yourself, Hot Rails to Hell.
I didn't really think about that much.
Okay.
That was just all done as a moment of inspiration.
I see.
And I didn't work on the arrangement much. I just brought it in. I don't think I had a cassette of that one. We just did it live in the studio.
Wow.
And I remember Sandy Perlman came in and he heard us rehearsing the song. He says, "Wow, that sounds like Hot Rods to Hell." There was a movie called Hot Rods to Hell, and with the motorcycle gang and race cars and whatever, it was Hot Rods to Hell. And then he said, "No, that should be Hot Rails to Hell." So actually, Sandy gave me the title for that.
There you go. How about this,
Sandy?
Sandy gave you that, right?
Yeah.
So check this out. So I'm gonna go not to the studio of this. I'm going to go to On Your Knees or On Your Feet. And, dude, this is Because this is live. You're in front of a big crowd. Yeah. Bass riff in there. Oh my God.
Yeah. There's a little bit of Little Incredible. Richard in there. You know.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. There was another song, what was it called?
Yeah, I was gonna say, you know, going back to my original question, I kind of derailed you, but do you have one that stands out that you worked on or were part of that just has this moment in it or maybe when you play
I can barely remember recording Hot Rails. I remember it was kind of frantic because we were in Columbia Studios, and it, you know, took maybe one or two takes. We didn't fuss with it a lot.
Right.
The original version, and I remember I came in and I sang it once and sang it twice, and that was done. You know, and. Let me think. I don't know.
So while you're thinking,
I'd say I was pretty happy with I Love the Night.
I Love the Night.
And it was on Spectres.
The great album. Song. That's right, Spectres, of course. Yeah.
I Love the Night. The sun is fun, but what a sound.
Oh, yeah.
What a sound. Look at that.
That night her kiss told me it was over.
This is one of those tracks that, you know, albums, that was the beauty of albums that the younger generation with newer songs is missing out on.
Yes.
You'd put on your headphones and you start off with Godzilla. You're laying in bed and you hear Godzilla and you're like, oh my God. And then it just rolls. And then this is the next to last track. It's like, it starts to mellow you out. And that's I Love the Night. And it's this beautiful, mellow, vibey song. And
yeah. And then it ends up with the vampire. Nosferatu. That was fun.
Yeah.
we did work on that one a lot. I played the Mellotron on that.
On Nosferatu?
Not only the bass, but I overdubbed the Mellotron on Nosferatu. Yeah, I felt like that was getting in deep into my prog influences.
Yep.
You have a song with a lot of sections. You know, a lot of emotions, key changes. You know, it was definitely epic. You know,
it's really,
and I love that one.
The thing is, it's really, you know, a 5 minute prog song. Come on, you got to make that 8 minutes.
We should never go full prog. Like I said, we're like the blues guys.
Don't ever go full prog,
right? Oh, that's awesome. So, lastly. I get hate mail if I didn't play a little bit of Burning For You with you here. Let me just, because this song to this day is just.
He's going to play with it.
Do you know my favorite part of this song is it's right here. It's always been the pre-chorus.
That raspy sounding bass. Martin Birch recorded that. And it really came. This is the bass.
Wow.
This is the bass.
Wait, I'm not looking at the camera. I'm missing out on something here.
Oh, yeah. This is the bass that was recorded, Burning For You.
Oh, and I wish I was recording the video of this.
I am.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect, and, man. Awesome.
It's a Music Man Stingray bass, and I still use it. I used it for every song on my new album.
Wow.
Excellent.
I mean, this is a great sounding bass. And that track too, I listen sometimes. I go on YouTube and there's individual tracks of their master tape. Some when they made all those video games maybe 10 years ago, they had to go back to the master tape and break down all the different parts. So that particular bass track is very, very tight. Albert and I really nailed that. Not all our tracks are that tight, but that was one of the tightest we ever did.
What's it like? You know, Grizz and I, we had a garage band. We've written songs, never at a level like what you hear with a song like this. It's got to be magic when you work on a song like that. You just probably have a vibe like this is going to be something special, right? When you're working on it?
Burner for You, we had a good vibe about.
Yeah.
We didn't know, you know. I thought as an album, that here's how crazy we were. Here's how crazy I was. I said, we should take that song off the album. It's not like the rest of the song.
Wow.
Wow. You know. Big mistake.
Fire good of unknown origin.
Good yes. thing they didn't do what the bass player said.
Wow.
I think after that, they never listened to me after that.
Well, you know what's funny is I have a note. I have a note about another song you guys did that was a collaboration with another legend. And where did my notes go?
Ian Hunter?
Oh, exactly. He knew exactly where I was going with this.
Yeah.
Why did my notes disappear? I wrote notes on that very thing. I must have kicked them out by accident.
He wrote a song with Eric Bloom called Going Through the Motions, which is on Spectre.
Right, exactly. And I had to know it's and the reason why it's interesting, because you mentioned how Burning for You and you're like the vibe. You could tell this is a, you know, because obviously Ian Hunter was famous for Mott the Hoople. And when you listen to this intro, Grizz. I mean, you haven't revisited this in ages. Two hours of care, you got hours to spare. You got steady wear in your eyes. You're leading me on, but you could be anyone. Cause I know you've been gone for a rise. And we're going through the motions. Yeah, we're going through the motions. It is really not a typical Blue Oyster Cult track, right?
Yeah, well, we were searching for different, different ideas at the time.
Right.
I love the track. I love playing on it. Decades later, I had just gotten Astronomy covered by Metallica.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah,
I think that changed my life. So I was down at the magazine store in the next town over, and there's Ian Hunter. I said, Ian, it's Joe. He says, hi, Joe Oyster. How you doing? So he gave me his number. And when I got the cover of Astronomy with Metallica, I quit my day job. I said, I'm going back to be a songwriter again.
Really?
And at that time, and at that time, Ian was living in the next town over from me. And I said, Ian, how about we go down to Neil Smith's house? Neil was the drummer in Alice Cooper. And we had a little band, and we would rehearse every Monday in Westport, Connecticut. So I would go pick up Ian, and I'd have a 40-minute drive to get down to Neil's house. So during that 40-minute drive, Ian would give me a songwriting lesson.
Wow.
In the car.
That's something.
I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, I'm kind of shy, you know. I don't push myself on people. But Ian is just super nice. And he doesn't like to have a schedule. You know, I went to pick him up and I said, "Where's your guitar?" So I'm not bringing. I'm just going to observe. He ended up writing four songs with us.
Wow,
that's incredible.
He wrote four songs with us, and you know, it really helped us out and the project that we were doing at the time.
That's
fantastic. But he also said to me that he was so glad that we recorded Going Through the Motions, because it was one of those times. He was real popular in Mott the Hoople, but you know, you have down times when nothing much is happening. So even a little thing like being on our, you know, gold album, writing a single on the gold album for Blue Oyster Cult was a big boost, you know. And then he did all kinds of things after that.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Oh, what a story, you know, that is.
You know, yeah, he's a great guy. He was like friends with Queen. He did the Freddie Mercury tribute.
Yeah.
You know, huge stuff.
Oh,
huge
Ian.
Stuff. And he's still out there and he's 80 some years old. And his show is fantastic.
Oh.
His show is actually fantastic. So
love it.
Anyway, I thank Ian, and you know, he helped me and gave me some songwriting lessons. I'd go to his studio and there would be like all these like folders, and there'd be a folders all over the walls. There'd be folders. And each one of the folders was a song, and he would, you know, he had his own way of working. And he said to me that putting in the hard work. Now you're talking about when you want to write a song. He says, "I'll work on a song, and if I find one word for that song, if I work all day on the song and I only find one word, it's worth it. It's worth it." If you just find that one perfect word for your song, you know.
Oh, that's fantastic!
So he is—he's a real craftsman, a hard worker, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, If you work all day on the song, you only get one word. It's worth it. You know
how many? I don't know about you.
Dig in the next day.
I don't know about you, but I don't know how many times I've written. There's a magic to when you can write a complete song in about 15, 20 minutes. That is magical.
Hot Rails to Hell was one of those.
Oh, was it?
Like it didn't take very long. Maybe a half hour.
See, those are amazing, right? Because you just get in a flow and it's a steady stream of consciousness from beginning to end. And then there's many times where you'll come up with a chorus. Like, oh, this is an awesome chorus, but I could not find any verses at all to work with this. You know,
yes.
Happens all the time.
Well, that's where the work starts. You get the sort of outline, the sort of curve, the vibe. The vibe is important. You know, maybe having a theme is good. A lot of the songs on Strange Legends really started with a theme. You know, African Queen was about a movie. Walk of Fame was about the Hollywood Walk of Fame. It was easy to write those things because you have a specific focus for where you're going with it. But then the work starts after, when you've got to fill in the second verse. And if you have a third verse, you got to do the third verse.
Right.
And then you got to figure out a bridge that works, you know. All of those structural things are done after the 15 minutes of inspiration.
Yes.
You know.
That's true.
Yeah.
So to close out,
because
I've kept you here over an hour. I told you how fast an hour can go.
I know it goes fast. It goes fast.
When you're having fun with us, it never stops. But hold on. I have to do this because we brought it up. It's this magic moment that happened when Joe said he was at a magazine stand, right? Yeah, that's got to be magic when Metallica says we're going to cover your song.
Covering the song changed my life. I mean,
that's awesome.
That was a quick inspiration too. I went for a walk on the beach. We had a beach house, the band house, that was near the beach, and I had those lyrics, and I had been studying them for a couple of weeks. And I changed a couple of lyrics around. The fourth line was the clock strikes 12. And I said, no, the first line should be clock strikes 12, you know, because that's the magic hour, you know?
Right.
So it was easy to make those changes to Sandy's lyric. And I went for a walk on the beach, and the whole melody just came to me, you know, as I'm walking on the beach. Came back. All the guys were at rehearsal. I said, here, I got this tune. Listen to this. And I started playing it. I don't, you know. And then, you know, some of those things like Alan's beautiful piano part at the beginning and Donald's melodies during the break there, that's part of the Blue Oyster Cult collaboration, you know. Wow. And Albert got half credit for the music because he did an incredible arrangement, you know, the da-da-da-da-da-da, that's Albert's work, you know. But the other parts are basically mine, you know, and Sandy's lyrics, so.
Well, Joe,
yeah,
thank you. Really thank you, thank you, thank you for going down.
Well, it's been great talking to you guys. I mean,
great
you
stories.
Know,
great stories.
Thanks.
Everyone go out and get the
Strange Legends
record with all those tracks we talked about on them, plus more. There's more tracks on there, so I didn't really...
Oh, yeah, it's lots. It's a good set.
And it's
it
a
really
very
hangs
good
together
set.
Well.
And when the quarantine's over, maybe Joe will be hitting the stage again.
Absolutely. Oh. I know there's going to be demand. There'll be a demand out there like nobody.
Oh, there sure will.
I'm demanding it, damn it. I got to see Joe.
Yeah.
But thank you, Joe. You're amazing.
Well, thank
you,
guys.
It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
And, good luck with everything, and I hope we can do this again sometime.
I would love to, man.
Albert's next album comes out in the fall, so you got to have him on.
Oh, if you can get Albert on, hey, can we get the brothers on? How about can we get?
Oh, maybe we'll do a double.
That would be magic to have the Bouchard brothers on here.
Absolutely,
and we can talk about Little Richard.
We started a record label called Rock Heart Records. How this came together in the middle of a economic disaster, pandemic, and all of that, and it came together. I mean, I guess somebody figures it can happen. So, you know, we're really excited. And his album will be out in October. So
let's come back in October. Please join, and we can do this and talk more music stories and dive into music.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it will.
Yeah. Let's do it. All right, Joe,
you're amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank you so much, guys.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Have a great night. Be safe.
I'll be in touch.
Thank you, Joe.